You are listening to the Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show podcast on Gear 30 Radio. Adventure for your ears. Shop Gear 30 premier mountain equipment and improve your outdoor experience.
Gear 30 Radio!
You haven't lived until you've heard the show Americans are talking about. The show that launches its listeners to the height of humanity. The audio hour that travels the landscape of adventure. The sound that comforts more than the clip of your first bolt. It's the Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show!
Outdoor Adventure summits the airwaves. It's the Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show. I'm your host, Brandon Long. I'm belay with you for the next hour in studio with me, finally back from losing a gallbladder, is Todd of the Top. How are you feeling, Todders?
I'm feeling much better. That was just 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, two
it's
weeks.
A quick thing. Yeah. And then you're doing well. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, you look good. So this week is news and events. We have Dixie announces campground openings for spring Utah camping destinations, Utah glamping, Utah Symphony to perform at national parks, Pow Mow, Snow Basin, Pond Skim events, Rendezvous Weekend, get all dressed up and stuffed out there at Fort Bonaventura, Utah Energy Bars made of crickets, new Forest Service directives promote summer use, Snow Basin's coming to a close, Utah cyclist dies of accidental pain medication overdose, and then the oldest person in the world to climb a 514A. Any guesses how old he is? 514A.
14.
Oldest.
Oh, did you say oldest?
Yeah. Wingsuit flyer to jump off Everest. Have we reached peak beard?
We'll talk about that.
We'll talk about that. Woman attacked by a bear with the power of five. The ILC claims slopestyle is too dangerous. Don't be a lazy rat. Cow fart packs and a 100-year-old message in a bottle.
I knew you were going to pick that story. I absolutely knew you were
going to
pick
the fart pack story. How do you pass up cow fart packs? And really, we have some events and then not much else. It's mostly news, quote of the week, all this and more on episode 165, camping season of the Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show. So let's charge.
He summits with the agility of a mountain goat, flashes routes faster than UPS, is more intimate in the mountains than Jake Gyllenhaal. He's Todd to the Top.
All right, we'll kick things off locally here. So camping has open. It's officially camping season. Drove down like South Fork. Camping is not open. It's closed. I don't know if they, I think they wait till Memorial Day weekend or the weekend before, probably Memorial Day. But down there in Dixie National Forest, they have road openings and campground openings. So the Dixie National Forest encourages visitors to know before you go to learn about the travel conditions and opportunities available. The Oak Grove Campground, as well as the Oak Grove Road Forest Service 32, scheduled to reopen on May 1st. The road is closed for heavy maintenance. But the upper road near the campground, it had a washout, so they'll be fixing that. Additionally, Forest Service road crews are doing some mechanical vegetation brushing along the roadway to improve access and driving visibility and stuff like that. So, additionally, the campgrounds on the Pine Valley Ranger District are planned to reopen as scheduled. Oak Grove Campground May 1, and then the Honeycomb Rocks Campground May 9th. So get your camping on. Head to Southern Utah or other places. You don't have to go to an actual campground. Just camp legally down by the river somewhere.
Oh, we're all looking forward to it. Absolutely. Yeah.
So where are the best camping destinations in Utah? Well, here are some ideas brought to us from KSL. They put together this little ditty. Capitol Reef National Park is one. San Rafael Swell, one of my favorites. Kind of stinky, but beautiful. Zion's National Park's Watchman Campground. And I'm glad this last place made the list in Utah because a lot of people don't take advantage of it, and that is Antelope Island, available year-round.
I've never camped on Antelope.
So, yeah, you can head out there and camp now if you want to. Oh, you can turn that on?
No, it's on.
That's on. Okay. We're good. I can turn it up. Pause for a second. Pause for station identification.
No, I think we're good. There you go. That's much better.
There we go. So yeah, Antelope Island on the list, which made it, which is good.
Have you camped over an antelope before?
No.
Me neither. I think we should.
Yes. No, I visited you camping. I didn't stay the night. Yeah, no. But you camped out there. Or did you glamp out there?
I think it was on the glamp side.
The glamp side, yeah. So this out of Moab, the world of camping in Utah just became a little more glamorous.
I was following. This is a group, Moab, right?
Yeah, glamping. Glamorous camping for those laymen out there. It's a new trend in the old outdoor recreation. It's popping up around the country. The first such endeavors, Yellowstone Under Canvas, was met with marked success. So now glamping's come to Utah. Organizers hope it's going to be met with similar acclaim. For those looking for an outdoor experience filled with luxury and comfort, Moab Under Canvas is a must try. So these guys, Pam Yang, maybe that's a girl, Pam, I'm assuming. We saw an opportunity to create a new travel experience that combined our love of the outdoors with what travelers were looking for, authenticity without compromising on comfort and style. Moab Under Canvas is a camping outfitter near Arches National Park. It caters to high-end campers. Lodgers can choose between a variety of sizes of large canvas tents that come complete with running water, raised wooden floors, beds, and all the amenities of home. Our target customers are adventurers.
With money.
Yeah, whether with friends or family, we're seeing the biggest draw. So how are these different from the round, the yurts? These are canvas.
The ones that I've seen.
They're kind of open, like
big four-sided ones.
Right.
Kind of old school, fancy Boy Scout tents. Yeah. The big canvas ones.
But with decks.
You
running
enough,
water.
Like beds.
Sweet.
Like beds. These aren't cots. They're like beds inside.
And they're not necessarily cheap. I mean, campers can choose between several options ranging from $89 a night to $495 a night.
$89's not too bad.
$89's not bad. $500 is a bit much for glamping. I don't know. It depends on what you get, I guess. But anyway, head down to Moab.
Camping without getting dirty. You know? Yeah. But you're still experiencing the beauty of Moab in that area, so.
Yeah. What else we got on the docket here? So we have a lot from Utah, actually. I'm waiting for the page here to come up. The Utah Symphony is going to perform at the Utah National Parks. They're teaming up with the Utah Office of Tourism to offer concerts and community events at 5 national parks, August 11th through 17th. It's the Utah Symphony Mighty 5 Tour. It was announced at the press conference hosted by where else would a Utah Symphony announce a press conference but at Momentum Climbing Gym,
of course,
in Mill Creek, because they opened
exactly,
had their grand opening on the 15th. So three members of the Utah Symphony played a selection of classic music. It was volunteers from Momentum Climbing Gym provided a backdrop as they climbed with the walls, introducing the idea of combining recreation with live music. So the vision of Utah Symphony and Utah Opera is to connect the community with great live music, said Milia Torrengio, president of and CEO of Utah Symphony and Utah Opera. We can think of no better way to accomplish this vision than to present this tour celebrating Utah's iconic Red Rock landscape with world-class talent of the Utah Symphony. So you can look for that in August.
I'm going to bookmark that right now. That sounds like a really, that sounds like a lot of fun.
So skiing is coming to an end. This is the camping episode.
I thought it came to an end, so that tells you.
I think Powder's done. Snow Basin is done this weekend. Both Snow Basin and Powder Mountain had pond skimming events last weekend.
Talking about that over at Slack, yeah.
Did you go? You didn't go. Did somebody over there see it?
Somebody that works over there competed.
Oh, compete,
yeah.
Really?
Yes, did pretty well. Yeah, had a lot of fun.
I saw a video, and I don't know if it's on this one or not, but a video of someone who made it across the water, backflipped out. No kidding. Which is pretty good. So, yeah,
that's
Powder Mountain
good.
And Snow Basin had their pond skim events this past weekend. It's traditionally held the end of the season as winter resorts, you know, try and find what to do, how to celebrate the end of the year. So it's usually about 2 to 3 feet deep, about 30 feet long. So, boy, there's some wipeouts. And there's some awesome skiing and snowboarding through. You can watch the video. I got this from the Standard Examiner. So yeah, go ahead and set your clocks back, like spring forward to 1840 if you can.
Right,
and enjoy a rendezvous at Fort Bonaventura. That is this weekend. The fur trading era. If a man didn't show up, it was considered he was dead, said Chuck Willis, known by his preferred name, Thor.
That's awesome.
During the rendezvous he oversees as Bushway. It's from a French term that means the guy in charge, said Thor of South Ogden. The rendezvous is today through Sunday, April 8th. That's April 18th through 20th. So back in the day, rendezvous provided trappers a way to make money by selling pelts, a chance to trade for vital supplies and tools, otherwise unavailable, a rare opportunity to leave a solitary life behind for a few days. So can we show up in like normal clothes to the rendezvous just to check it out, I wonder? Or do we have to go full on 1840s garb in order to walk around? And
I'm sure it's preferred.
Sure. Oh, I'm sure it's preferred.
But I think that you can show up.
At least you've got
show up in your Arc'teryx.
Oh, yeah. Beard going.
That would probably get me in.
Yeah. You need one of those fur hat things with a tail.
Something. Yeah, exactly.
But you're halfway there. The people who did this are called buckskinners, and buckskinners like to get together and, as closely as possible, recreate something similar to the rendezvous in the late 1800s. These are people who only see each other once a year, unless they go to more rendezvous. So then they're singing, dancing, trading, competitions.
They're LARPers.
There's what?
They're LARPers.
LARPers?
It's a live action role playing.
Oh.
Usually it's like your Dungeons and Dragon geeks, but I don't see how this is any different.
Or Civil War.
I think it's the same thing. It's still live action role playing.
Yeah. Live action role playing. Mm-hmm. Not that Dungeons and Dragons is role playing is
that's going
is
on this
bad.
Weekend too.
No,
that's the
it is Comic Con.
Salt Lake Comic Con. I think that starts today, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Yeah, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I might go Saturday morning. We will see. Then, I always go to the San Diego one.
Yeah,
and I'll be going again at the end of July again probably. But
that's like the huge. That's the big one
in San Diego. Yeah.
How does Salt Lake compare?
Salt Lake is apparently one of the biggest in the country.
Is it really?
There's a lot of geeks in Utah. Yeah, a lot. Huh. They had their first one last year, and it.
This is only year two, and it was that big in the first year.
It was that big a deal. Wow. Yeah, it's at the I want to say convention center, I think, and then it might even spill over to the Salt Palace, and then I think it even has some activities at the Delta Center or the Energy Solutions Center.
See, I like some of the some of those shows that the people will geek out on. I don't know. Maybe not the really cool ones. But
you don't have to be.
But I don't know about. I guess I just can't. I don't know. To dress up and go. You know, to
you
pick a character and dress
I've
up
never,
and go.
I've
You've never dressed up. You just go as is.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Some of these people, they really get into it, but no, it's not the majority that dress up.
But there's opportunity to see famous people and
autographs. Yeah. If you're a fan of the genre type stuff, then it's a good opportunity. And they're all coming all the way out. Because see, the San Diego one, obviously close to LA and Hollywood, and so it makes a lot of sense. There's a lot of big names coming out.
Is that because Sundance is such a big deal, you think? Or is it like not even the same thing?
I think that the geeks have a lot of pull out here. Yeah. I really do. Yeah.
Well, this is kind of geeky, I guess. A Utah entrepreneur makes energy bars from crickets.
That was a sweet transition.
Manufactured here in Utah. Chapul, I don't know if I'm saying that right. It's Chapul. Chapul Energy Bars have been gaining a lot of attention. Perhaps you saw them featured on the Shark Tank show, or maybe you noticed that they were dubbed one of the best new energy bars at this year's Expo West. But chances are you've heard of the Chapul bars. It's because of their unusual ingredient of crickets. The idea for insect energy bars first occurred to Pat Crowley in 2011. As he researched the topic, he realized that insects are a rich source of protein, iron, and omega-3 acids. They're also low in cholesterol and fat, and they're probably plentiful. You could probably have like a cricket garden in your backyard. So with those kinds of benefits, it's not surprising that about 80% of the world's population, 80% except for like 2% in the United States, I guess, they include insects as part of their diet.
Mm-hmm.
So of course, most Americans aren't too keen on the idea of eating anything with six legs. Undeterred, Crowley launched a Kickstarter campaign. The initial goal was to make a batch of 2,000 cricket bars and launch a website. Donors from around the globe supported the unorthodox energy bars, given the international appeal of an insect diet. It's unsurprising that the money came from more than a dozen different nations. Crowley used the Kickstarter funds to buy bulk ingredients and produce his inaugural batch of bars, and his sales grew. And they've been growing. So his 2 years have been truly amazing. Despite the positive reception that Crowley has experienced, many people reading this will still have lingering questions like, are the crickets crunchy? How do they taste? That kind of stuff. So,
yes, because we Americans, we have standards with what we eat. We really do.
I want soggy crickets.
Unless it's fried or artificial. Yeah.
As for the taste, that's up to personal interpretation. While the presence of crickets is probably a huge deterrent for some people, it says, I found the person who wrote this, I found the energy bars to be delicious because dates are the primary ingredient. They taste similar to the popular fruit and nut bars made by, is it Larabar? Mm-hmm. Larabar with the, yeah. He says if he didn't know, he wouldn't know there were crickets in them had someone not told him. So anyway, check it out. Chapul. Pick them up. They were, yeah. And got picked up apparently. So another Utah company was on Shark Tank. I didn't get to see the episode. I just heard about it. The fuel where you can recharge your cell phone when you're boiling your water in camp. And Mark Cuban, I guess, was the one who picked them up. And I met the owner in Salt Lake, and he said he was on the show, but he couldn't mention, you know, he said he signed his life away, so he couldn't mention anything if he got picked up or not. But they picked him up, so
what's, we'll see. Just real quick, what's Shark Tank?
What?
I'm sorry. No offense to anybody.
So Shark Tank is, it's been around for years, actually, but it's been it's had a couple of reincarnations here, but it's a television show where you go on and you pitch your idea or product to a panel of four investors, and they will chew you up if your idea is crap, or
the Shark Tank.
You have the ability to get picked up by one of those investors, if not all, or a couple of them can.
And there's success stories, I'm guessing, coming out of this.
And there's success stories. Nice. And so, yeah, it's a pretty great show.
That sounds like it.
For the Forest Service, getting all involved in stuff, they're trying to promote year-round action at ski resorts. So the U.S. Forest Service said Tuesday that it finalized policy guidelines that will open opportunities for ski areas to promote year-round recreation activities that are natural resource-based, because you don't want any unnatural activities going on up at ski resorts. They'll create additional jobs for communities with ski areas on national forests. So that could help Snow Basin Ski Resort, who had no immediate comment, but they do sit on some national forest land, so those guidelines will help direct them to have more four season activities up there. So that'll be good. Speaking of Snow Basin, it is their last weekend. This weekend, they're going to do skiing in the sunshine, although it might rain a little bit or snow this weekend. They still have a 100-inch base, which is pretty good. So head up there this weekend. If you didn't go up to Powder, you know, you got to hike Powder if you want to go ski. But finally, and more, our last local story, a Utah cyclist died at the age of 23. This is a tragedy here. He was once a promising young cyclist who rode with Jameis Hagans of the Trek Livestrong development team, Salt Lake's Chase Pinkham. He died Sunday night at the age of 23. Family members told Velo News that it appears the West High graduate died of an accidental overdose on pain medication. Pinkham had been plagued with pain after being hit by a car while training in Canada in 2008. The Deseret News chronicled his efforts to regain his cycling career in February 2010. The news also wrote about his participation in the Tour of Utah in 2011. Pinkham talked about seeking treatment for severe depression caused by years of dealing with chronic pain as a result of the 2008 crash. He talked about that on his Facebook page in March, so he was definitely struggling. In that post dated March 9th, he said that he shared his struggles so that others wouldn't feel so isolated. Quote, dealing with chronic pain, years of medication, and depression is something that, mind you, he's only 23 years old, that may make you completely alone and helpless, even when surrounded by the people that love you. He wrote, please remember that if you're suffering currently or ever end up suffering, that you're not alone and that people love you. There's help available, and asking for it only proves that you have the strength to reach out and the desire to change the state that you're in. Many suffer but so few ask for that help, ask for help that so many are willing to give. So it's sad that they're calling it an accidental overdose. Took too much. Not good. This said ammonia?
Pneumonia.
Oh, that's accidental if you're down in pneumonia. Yeah, pneumonia. Maybe associated with it? I don't know. Huh. We'll have to see an update. This was out of the Salt Lake newspaper.
Tribune.
Yeah, so I asked you earlier, who is the oldest person in the world to climb a 514A? You said 14.
Yeah, see, I missed the oldest bird in there. Yeah, exactly.
You want to re-guess on that?
No quizzes.
Oldest climb. So 514A, that's no joke.
I'm guessing 66.
66 is pretty old. 61. Yep.
Nevada. They're getting staying healthier longer.
Staying healthier longer.
Just a matter of time, yeah.
His name is Nevado Marin. He's now the oldest climber to ascend a 514A at 61 years old. His nickname is Nevado, which means rookie in Spanish.
Oh, that's cool.
He's far from it. Nevado sheds light on the principles and values that climbing teaches. There's a video here that talks about his climbing. It's on rockandice.com. Check it out. We'll post it up when we put the link up to all these. But pretty cool stuff. Yeah, I climbed a 514. So, I mean, I was never like great, but the hardest I ever got on was a 512A. So 514, and that was when I was, you know, early 20s. He's climbing 514.
He's still got a few years. 61.
I'll come back. I'll come back and climb 514 when I turn 60. Uh-huh. So there's the wingsuit flying.
Okay.
And then there's the wingsuit flying through, like you saw, the pinholes, you know, like, uh-huh. You know, that's crazy. And then there's the wingsuit flying off of Mount Everest.
Is that going to happen?
And then there's the wingsuit flying off of Mount Everest live on Discovery Channel. Just like the person who did the walk across the, what was it, the Grand Canyon? Or what did he walk across that was live on Discovery Channel? So with the world watching, Joby Ogwin, I don't know, he'll summit Mount Everest, the tallest mountain on the earth, and then we'll do what no one has done before, well, on purpose, potentially, jump off. The Daredevil wingsuit flyer will launch from 29,035 feet, fly at speeds of 150 miles per hour, and make the world's fastest descent from the summit of Everest base, from the summit to Everest Base Camp, plunging more than 10,000 feet before deploying his parachute and hopefully landing safely. That says here, at least that's the plan. He will do this live on Discovery Channel to 224 countries and territories. The epic history-making event entitled Mount Everest Live is set for a two-hour broadcast on May 11th. Set your clocks. At 9 p.m. Eastern time. So
I don't know if I want to see that live.
I don't.
I think there's variables.
Don't like watching people die.
Death variables. Yeah. Like that's a quick descent too.
At a really high altitude.
At a really high altitude. Yeah.
The Weather Channel's Jim Cantor will serve as chief meteorologist, and he'll track the unpredictable weather. He will join host. They'll have a host. Could you imagine this gig?
Ryan Seacrest is going to be on top.
Yeah, exactly. Willie Geist of NBC News in New York City studio, while Kyle Martino of NBC Sports. Please, nothing go wrong on this. I couldn't imagine. And Chris Jacobs of the Discovery Channel. They'll report from the Everest Base Camp. So bonus, they get paid to go to Everest Base Camp, and they get a, you know, bonus number two is to report on it if all goes well. If it does not go well, this is going to be like the worst gig ever.
If this was edited and just like done after, it would still pack a punch. I don't think I need to see this live.
But Ogwin's 39 years old. He's no stranger to Everest. In 1999, he became the youngest American at the time to climb Everest, doing so at age 24. He climbed the mountain twice more, claiming a record for the fastest ascent of the south route in just 9.5 hours. And he's an athlete. So in October 2010, he stepped out of a small plane and became the first person to fly in a wingsuit next to Everest before landing at base camp. So now he's just putting the two together. So he jumped out of a plane sort of near the height of it. He's climbed it, well, it sounds like three times now. So now he's just going to climb it, jump off it, put it all together, be the first to do it, catch it on television live, and there you go. We'll podcast it live. How's that?
I don't know if I want to watch that live, to tell you the truth. I honestly don't know if I do.
So here's your two favorite actors, potentially.
those are two manicured and sculpted beards, as far as I'm
yeah,
concerned.
Yeah, I think they're a little over manicured.
Yeah,
that's I don't really like
that's
that like look.
A little accessory is all.
Yeah,
that is.
Not one hair is out of place. So, have we reached peak beard, Todd? What's your feedback on the state of beards?
I'd say they. I mean, there is a certain trendiness to them. There's no question.
This
that's,
got
that's
shared.
The whole hipster thing.
It is kind of the hipster thing, yeah. So on Outside Magazine, they say beards are back, but maybe not for long. New research, because someone got paid to research this, suggests that we may have reached peak beard, a scenario in which the attractiveness of facial hair begins to decrease. As more people grow beards, their potential partners find the look less becoming. The new study found that once we've reached peak beard, the pendulum swings back toward clean-shaven men. To get these results, researchers asked men and women, who are these researchers? Men and women to rank different levels of beardedness.
Both this story, groups, keep in mind too, this story is off the BBC too. I don't know what the beard situation is over in the UK, but...
Are they ahead? Are they behind?
I don't know.
Yeah, both groups indicated that beards are less bristled and less bristled chins were more attractive when they were rare. So now it's just trendy? Is that what they're saying?
That's
now they're saying
any
if
sort
you
of
have
fashion.
A beard, it's not necessarily, yeah, it's because you wanted to fit in. It's not just because you wanted a beard. We'll see. We'll see.
Chicks like beards, period. I think for the most part.
You are a testament to that. You have people just stroking the beard at Slackwater, which is awkward.
Well,
you probably have bigger tips, though, now that you're bearded.
If people like beards.
Yeah. So there was a story about a woman in Florida who was attacked by five bears.
Was it five bears?
Turned out it was only one bear.
Well, what do you know? I think one bear is enough. I think just saying one beard, that's impressive.
One, she lived, so it's like if you live and you were attacked by five bears, that's more impressive than if you lived and you were attacked by one bear. But apparently the one bear had the ferocity of five bears. A Central Florida woman's recovering after being seriously injured in a bear attack Saturday night. When you think Florida, you don't necessarily think bear attacks, but...
I guess bear attacks are up in Florida, though.
Yeah, initial reports claim that Terry Frana was attacked by five bears simultaneously, but the state's Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission has since confirmed that it was just one bear, and probably with the power of five. Frana reportedly left the garage door of her suburban Lake Mary home open. When she returned to take out the trash, she came upon a bear rooting through the refuse. The bear turned and attacked her, taking her head in its mouth and dragging her toward the wooded area outside the house. Never a good sign. Frana was able to escape the bear's maw? The bear's maw? Maw or claw? Maw? And make her way back inside. Is maw a word? M-A-W? It's like,
I need to look that up. Right
escape
now.
The bear's maw and make her... Can I Google that right now? Like, yeah. Can you do that on the...
I'll look it up.
Yeah. Back inside the house, she is currently recovering after receiving 30 staples and 10 stitches in her head. It was short, it was quick, and it was a close call. Says her Frana's husband is Frank, of course. Bear incidents have become a serious problem in Seminole County with 44 nuisance reports filed this past year. So it's, yeah, bear attacks are up in Florida.
Jaws or throat of a voracious animal.
Is what maw is the definition maw. Of maw. Learn something every day. It's your word of the day.
You are listening to the Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show podcast on Gear 30 Radio. Adventure for your ears. Shop Gear 30 premier mountain equipment and improve your outdoor experience.
Gear 30 Radio!
The ILC says slope style is too dangerous. They're just listening to Sean White.
Sean White, yep.
Because he withdrew from the slope style, fearing injury, because Torstein Horgmo broke his collarbone in a training crash. And the potential risk of injury is a bit too much for me to gamble my other Olympic goals, White said. So he bailed, which might have been his only chance ever, because he's probably, I don't know if he even goes back to another Olympics. He didn't fare so well this.
Not this time around, Tom. No. Poor guy. Yeah. Poor guy. He got like five last year or the previous, didn't you?
Yeah, he got 100 medals, so it doesn't really matter.
I think more than anything, too, if I remember right, at Sochi, was, I think everybody says that.
You have to say it both ways, just Sochi, in case.
Sochi. was that particular course. And so I don't think necessarily every slopestyle course is as bad as that one was. Yeah. I remember that one got the attention because it was particularly dangerous. So, and it was all melting. Do you remember they were out there?
Trying to keep the ice, they had palm trees downtown and then up on the mountains they had snow. So if you're lazy, this is good news. Go ahead and blame your jeans. Next time you can't gather willpower to lace up your running shoes and go for a jog, blame your parents. Researchers.
So those kind of jeans.
At the University of Missouri, they've been busy identifying a possible link between the genes that motivate people to exercise and the speed of mental maturation. In other words, the genes responsible for getting you moving appear to be tied to the ones that help your neural pathways develop, making the study the latest to suggest the benefits of exercise extend far beyond the physical. So Frank Booth, he's the professor there at the veterinary school. He selectively bred some rats that exhibited either extreme activity or extreme laziness. Solidifying these traits during 10 generations of reproduction, the rats in the how do you breed lazy rats? The rats in the active lineage proved 10 times more likely than the lazy rats to decide on their own volition to run on an exercise wheel. Of course, this transfers immediately to humans, I'm sure. We found a big difference between the amount of molecules present in the brains of active rats compared to the brains of lazy rats. This suggests that the active rats were experiencing faster development of neural pathways than the lazy rats. These findings suggest that when kids exercise, this, because this happened in rats, obviously, these findings suggest that when kids exercise, they could be developing their neural pathways on top of getting fit and having fun. The neural pathways kids create by exercising could, in turn, set a precedent for a lifetime of motivation to stay physically active.
Maybe now we'll consider being active, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think all these parents need these studies anymore. I think this is a lot of common sense.
It's science.
I think it's a lot of common sense.
Do you know what else?
Here's another study. This is the, did you catch this one? And I don't even want to go into this because it's, it just seems like a stupid study to me. Cities with trees have happier residents.
I mentioned this.
Did you catch that?
I mentioned this
one?
On the last show. I saw that. Yeah. Well, that's like a, it's a common sense one. Is that what you're saying?
I think a lot of these are common sense ones. Yeah, absolutely.
Cities with more happy people are happier.
When you smile.
When you smile.
You're happier.
Yeah, exactly. Those, yeah. Now, what about methane in fart packs? That's science, right? Too much cow.
I remember back in the day, because it was the cow's fault. No, the cow's fart's fault. That the,
they
was
blew
the
a hole in the
ozone layer. Yeah, I remember that back in high school.
So there was a backlash against cows' greenhouse gas production because they're responsible for 25% of the methane produced on the planet.
A lot of cows out there.
Lord knows what dinosaurs were producing back in the day. So, you know, the White House took an official stance on cow flatulence as a part of its climate agenda. Let's cut emissions from our methane blowers by 2020. And Argentina's National Institute for Agricultural Technology may have a small-scale solution, cow fart packs. The fart pack, and this is like legit, man. It's like a osprey pack on the back of a cow. It sits with a tarp over the top of it and a harness and everything. It extracts 300 liters of methane, 300 liters of methane a day from a tube inserted inserted into the cow's, it's a rumen, the digestive tract. It converts big tummy rumblings into energy. This is your next.
Tummy rumblings.
This is your next energy source, just so everyone knows. The project is mostly hot air, INTA press officer Pablo Serrando explained.
Pun after pun after pun.
Fart packs show that cow flatulence can be more than noxious gas, but they were not developed for mass production. Imagine a future farm with a couple of these cows used to provide energy to satisfy the farm's needs, said Serrando.
You know where they
That's
need to take
need
this
it.
Fart pack? To the Shark Tank show. That's good money
there. Yeah, it'll blow up.
Oh.
He's there.
Oh, that was really good.
So, do you remember the farmhouse that blew up in Germany because
I
of all of the cows
yeah.
that were in there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's, should we end on something a little better than
we like really probably
a 100-year-old message in a bottle?
That's a neat story.
Yeah. Plucked from the Baltic Sea.
Save that story. I have a story that's, it's just like a half a, like maybe a half a notch, but no, it's probably worse than the cow farting one. But I found it interesting because we're going into summer, and summer means a lot of things to a lot of people. But if you're on the roads, you know it means road construction, right? And so I found this great article, the Deseret News, that the UDOT, Utah Department of Transportation, announced its top 10 projects that's going to affect motorists during this next summer season. So they got 175 projects, a combined budget of $800 million worth of road construction coming our way this summer. Seems to me it's more or less the entire year something's going on. But the major projects, there's a couple that are going to affect us in this area. It looks like they're going to replace multiple bridges from North Salt Lake to Farmington, add new interchanges at 2600 South, 500 South. And what are they adding? They're adding a pedestrian bridge also at Parish Lane. And so if you do make the trek, you know, between
Salt Lake
and Farmington, exactly, that'll affect us.
Yeah, Ogden Canyon last year was not fun.
It wasn't.
That's not on the docket. Did you see it?
They followed that. Didn't they finish that up? I think so.
Well,
yeah.
I thought they were done, and then I thought they were going to revisit it. I don't know.
Let's see. What they got in our area? Most of this stuff is a little bit further south. This is kind of interesting. You're heading over to Park City this summer. UDOT's going to resurface I-80 in Parley's Canyon.
That's good.
From the mouth of the canyon near Foothill Drive to the ranch exit. That'll be a huge deal come wintertime to have that brand new road. Riverdale Road construction in Roy. That'll affect us.
That's going down right now.
UDOT's overhauling Riverdale Road between I-84 and State Route 126 in Roy to improve traffic flow. That's more or less been going on since I moved here in 93. Yeah.
Yeah. So the news is when that stops.
Yeah.
When that construction ends, we'll throw a huge party and we'll shut the road down because it, you know, and then we'll throw a big party.
Maybe we can link this. This is kind of interesting, but those are the bigger ones and further north in our direction. So
the fun ones are when you plan your vacation to go wherever you're going. If you're going to, you know, North Dakota, Yellowstone
is a good one.
Vegas,
yeah, good
or whatever. And then the middle of nowhere, you've got an entire
goes from three or four
city
lights to
of
one.
Construction yeah. people apparently hiding somewhere because the cones start. The cones go for miles and miles, and you're down to one lane. And then the cones open up again.
Yeah.
No construction workers.
No.
Yeah.
Plus, literally, just the logistics of like 26 miles of orange cones and no activity.
Yeah. Yeah. So those are the most frustrating ones there. And that's usually, I mean, that could be a UDOT thing and if it's in Utah somewhere. But this guy probably didn't have to worry about that back in 1913 on a nature hike along Germany's Baltic coast. 20-year-old Richard Platz scrawled a note on a postcard, shoved it into a brown beer bottle, corked it, and tossed it into the sea. Where it traveled, no one knows for sure, but it was pulled out of the Baltic Sea by a fisherman last month, not far from where Platz first pitched it. It's thought to be the world's oldest message in a bottle. The French news agency, Agence France-Presse, writes, a fisherman pulled the beer bottle with a scribbled message out of the Baltic off the northern city of Kiel last month. And this is certainly the first time such an old message in a bottle was found, particularly with the bottle intact. Yeah, and it didn't hit a rock. It just survived, just hung out there. So Platz was identified as the author of the note, and a Berlin-based genealogical researcher then located 62-year-old Angela Erdmann, his granddaughter. Erdmann said she's never met Platz, who was her mother's father. He died in 1946, age 54. Erdmann visited the museum last week and was able to hold the bottle and says that was a pretty moving moment. She tells German news agency, tears rolled down my cheeks. It is, according to Guinness World Records, the oldest message in a bottle. Did you know, by the way, side notes, Chuck Norris had a diary. It's called the Guinness Book of World Records.
You can't get enough Chuck Norris. So
that's really all I had. Except for John brought this one up earlier on the Mr. Goodyear Show podcast before we dove into that podcast. We didn't talk about it on the podcast. It was before we started. 10 best jobs for trail runners. So if you want to be a full-time, well, You want to trail run a lot, so these are the jobs that fit that lifestyle well.
That's a good idea.
We were debating on whether these were legit or not. Okay. Number one, a yoga instructor.
Okay.
But then it goes. It has real life people in here. So like Rachel Sislowitzki, 34 years old, out of St. George, Utah. She's the owner and teacher at Yoga Soul, and she loves trail running. So, number one, or I don't know if these are in any order here, but you could be a yoga instructor. Next one, and these are all on different pages, so I got to tab to the next page. Two, a trail running blogger. Say, for instance, like Brian Powell, who started irunfar.com. He's 35 years old, full-time blogger of trail ultra running, yeah. And I'm sure many of you listeners have been on his page before. Number three, you could be a race director, full-time race director. Co-owner, this is Nick Curry, co-owner of the Aravaipa Running, or Aravaipa, I never know how to say that one. It's the one Kelly Agnew runs quite often down there in the desert, so Phoenix, Arizona. Number four, a physical therapist. Now, that one you could actually make some money at and run. Number five, a teacher. Why? You got your summers off there. They highlight Kim Dobson, 29 years old, out of Grand Junction, Colorado. Number six, a running coach. That might make you hate running. I don't know. You're doing it all day long. They highlight Matt Hart, 39 years old, out of Boulder, Colorado, owns Coaching Endurance. Cassie Scallion is a nurse. There's another one that you could probably make forge a decent income out of. Number eight, massage therapist. Chris Grouch, 41 years old, out of Boulder, is a full-time massage therapist and trail runner. A specialty running store employee. Now, John did tell me, and this goes the same for the guys who work here and girls who work here at Gear 30, pretty much the first thing you ask people who apply for jobs here is, hope you don't like your Saturdays, because you're going to be working most of them. So they had to... implement the no Saturday off thing. So you can run all you want. You just can't enter the races, I guess. So the next one would be, wow, let's look at this. A trail running podcaster. 47-year-old Ian Corliss, out of Trent, UK. He's the host of Talk Ultra. And full-time job for him. So good job. He figured it out. And that's it. Number 10. You got anything else?
Did we talk about the sea lion pup? Did you hear about this one?
The sea lion pup that, like...
He got a little lost.
Went on his own marathon run?
He got lost. Yeah. Hoppy.
Hoppy?
Hoppy the sea lion pup, right? Anyway, he made news in California because he found his way 100 miles inland.
He pulled his own 100-mile trek. He hopped 100 miles?
100 miles inland, yeah.
That's so far.
He was found by ranch hands in Modesto, California, I guess 8 miles west of Modesto, on an almond orchard. And so he had already worked his way, like,
can
almost
they verify
90 miles.
That Hoppy really did hop all that way and no one, like, kidnapped him, drove him inland, and then dropped him off at an almond field
That's
or something?
That's a horrible story. I don't know.
And he was all right? Did they return him? Is he doing good?
Yeah, he was picked up by a marine mammal center in Sausalito and returned. I guess he'd lost some weight.
How crazy is that?
He, I guess.
He's trying to repopulate somewhere.
His GPS was off. Yeah, exactly.
Apparently. Yeah. So we have a couple events coming up this weekend, if we can get the podcast up in time. Saturday morning. Well, it's actually Saturday most of the day. The Salomon trailer will be in the Gear 30 Striders parking lot. You can demo Strider shoes from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. So, and then at 8:30 a.m., Striders and Gear 30 will have a run in the morning, so you can run with us. It's about 9 miles we're planning. So Salomon Running Demo Day, Gear 30 parking lot out here. That's Saturday, April 19th. Then Monday, April 21st, a pretty awesome evening, highlighting outdoor research, Western Mountaineering, and Osprey. It'll be discounts on those particular brands because the rep for those brands, Lita Sharp, will be in the shop. She'll be helping. She's bringing some cheese and crackers and wine and perhaps some Colorado beer.
That's a nice opportunity.
To test. And you can chat with her. She's been with these brands for a really long time, knows her stuff. But she also has gift with purchase. So if you spend $150 or more, you get a gift with your purchase. And I've heard the gifts are worth upwards of $70. So, wow. Plus you get a discount on your purchase that night only, Monday night only. If you're looking to get a sleeping bag, backpack, or some hiking apparel from Outdoor Research, that's going to be the night you're going to want to get it. So that's this coming Monday. And then on next Saturday, the Striders Racing Circuit 30K is up there at Beehive Homes. That's the last one. It's your last available chance before to train before the Ogden Marathon. And I haven't told you this yet, Todd, but we were cordially invited from John with Striders to MC the finish line if you're interested, and I'm available. I got to check. I didn't plan on this because he just asked today. So I got to make sure we're good next Saturday to hang out at the finish line of the 30K and announce the finishers.
Okay.
Next Saturday, the following Saturday, is the North Ogden, or they call it No Limits Half Marathon. We'll have a booth there. And then if you want to learn how to kayak, the best kayaking class in the state through Rapid Progression. I got more in the hat right here. It's Rapid Progression Kayak School.
That group, yeah.
Their first class of the year is going to be the 7th, 8th, and 10th of May. So you have 2 days in the Weber State University pool. You pay $150. That covers your instructor and all the gear. You basically show up with your swimsuit and towel, and they will give you a boat, skirt, paddle, nose plugs, everything else, and teach you how to roll, teach you 2 days in the pool, and then take you down the Weber River, safe environment. So that'll be good. May 7th, 8th, and 10th. For more information on that, call the shop here or go to gear30.com. Then May 9th and 10th, that weekend, is the Adventure Gear Expo in Salt Lake, which is open to the public. So that'll be retailers and manufacturers in Utah. We fill in I think that's at the Expo Center down there. May 17th is the Ogden Marathon.
Wow, that's already
Ogden Marathon, yeah. And that's it for this week's show, camping season. Quote of the week. It always rains on tents. Rainstorms will travel thousands of miles against prevailing winds for the opportunity to rain on a tent. By Dave Barry. So buy a tent that can withstand rain. Hello, we have Hillebergs, which are amazing. And new this year at Gear 30, MSR tents, and then Big Agnes as well. So a plethora, if you will. Thank you for listening to the Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show on Gear 30 Radio. Adventure for your ears. Find the OOA Show podcast on iTunes and gear30.com. As John Muir would say, the mountains are calling, and we must go.